We're at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Coming up at 8 o'clock will be Democracy Now!, but right now at 7 a.m., stay tuned for What's Going On with Frenchie Davis.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, good people. It's the last day of the first month of 2023. Thank you, 2023, for getting us off to the right start. Last week, we discussed Governor Ron DeSantis, the racist extremism to eject African-American studies from a AP program in the Florida school system. Please visit our archives if you missed that airing. It was a great show with our callers and listeners. As we close out January, I felt it so important to discuss the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. But instead of celebrating the protection of reproductive rights afforded by Roe, we're reflecting on both the new challenges in abortion access and the wave of momentum to protect reproductive freedoms following the Supreme Court's decision in the Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization. And ever since Roe was overturned, individual states have been free to further ban or restrict abortion or to pass protective, I don't know how it's protective, but proactive policies. As many states race to double down on abortion bans, there is an astounding 17 states and at least 24 localities that took action to protect and expand access to care in the 90 days following the Dobbs decision. As what would have been the 50th anniversary of Roe approaches, and the nationwide patchwork of abortion access grows more stark, it's now time to take an even greater action to continue to fight for reproductive freedom across the country. This would be the anniversary of Roe. Today, I am joined by Andrea Miller. She is the president of the National Institute for Reproductive Health and the NIRH Action Fund, advocacy groups that work to advance reproductive freedom, including just and equitable access to abortion medical care at the state and local levels. This is the moment where advocates and state legislators need to keep digging deep to innovate policy solutions. Cities and states must continue to allocate millions of dollars to abortion access, and voters everywhere are acting decisively to protect abortion access. Andrea Miller and the NIRH have long been leading the way on exactly these kind of actions. She is a superhero, and it is my honor to have her join us here today. So we have much to talk about. It is at the top of the hour. I will say that Mother Nature, again, is being relatively kind to us. It is 41 degrees. A little bit of snow this morning. Okay, we had to get in a little bit this year. But it'll yield mostly to cloudy skies this afternoon. Winds northwest 10 to 15 miles per hour. But this evening, it will get cloudy. It will get nippy at about 28 degrees. So let's all dress accordingly. And as I always say, let's make sure to take care of the ones that we love. Andrea Miller is going to be joining us, but first, let's catch in on a little national news. Take a listen.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Our hearts go out to the family, but this has become a maddening deja vu of Black mothers, of Black parents wailing for their children, and a community collectively grieving and mourning.
Representative Ayanna Pressley of Massachusetts says it will take great political will to change policing in America and end the incidents of police violence, which led to the death of 29-year-old Tyree Nichols of Memphis. President Biden will meet with members of the Congressional Black Caucus this week to discuss what it says are much-needed national reforms to the justice system. Meanwhile, the parents of Tyree Nichols will reportedly attend President Biden's State of the Union address on February 7th.
When anyone goes to the grocery store this week, you can blame everybody in D.C. that's not willing to live within our means for your interest rates going up and the cost of your eggs and meat going up.
Senator Rick Scott of Florida and members of the Senate Republican Conference say they will not vote for any bill to raise the nation's debt limit unless it's tied to significant budget cuts. The senators say meaningful structural reform in spending is needed to address the nation's $31 trillion debt. Nearly $5.5 billion of COVID-19 aid may have been awarded to small businesses with ineligible Social Security numbers.
There's an urgency to get the money out, and so you may not do the same level of due diligence before writing those checks.
Sean Moulton with the Project on Government Oversight says much of the abuse is connected to the government's Paycheck Protection Program.
Redistricting is like an election in reverse. Usually the voters get to pick the politicians. In redistricting, the politicians get to pick the voters.
Former GOP strategist Tom Hofeller was known as the master of the modern gerrymander, and his impact still resonates today. The Democracy Docket says unresolved legal challenges to redrawn political maps could play a big role in 2024 congressional elections. Litigation is ongoing in 15 states, including New York and Texas, and their combined 64 congressional seats.
When and if this vote comes, it will be a moment of clarity. And I hope many of these Republicans will have conscience.
Minnesota Representative Ilhan Omar says she looks forward to a floor vote regarding her reappointment to the House Foreign Affairs Committee. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is leading efforts to unseat Omar based on her previous comments regarding Israel. However, three Republicans now say they will oppose McCarthy's efforts. The House is poised to vote Tuesday on a bill titled the Pandemic is Over Act, though President Biden has announced he will end the twin national emergencies addressing the COVID-19 pandemic on May 11th. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
Thank you for that national news. Wow, the Pandemic is Over Act. Y'all keep voting for these crazy people. Good morning. Good morning, good people. I am Frenchie Davis, your host this Tuesday and every Tuesday morning here on What's Going On at WBAI New York. I am so excited to have this guest. I have been waiting, especially as January 22nd, the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade passed us by, or should I say, what should have been the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. There's work to do, and there's even more work to be undone. I'd like to welcome Miss Andrea Miller of the National Institute for Reproductive Health. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning, Frenchie. It's good to be here.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me. for those states who still have reproductive rights for women and families, I guess I say happy anniversary. How do we address this now? Or can we no longer honor reproductive rights when so many women have been abandoned by their legislators with reproductive rights?
It's such a good question, and it's so painful to be in a moment when we have, as of this morning, I believe it's 12 states that banned abortion. In the wake of Roe versus Wade, almost 1,400 laws against abortion were enacted at the state level, even with the protections of Roe. So we have been living already with the inequities and the challenges that we had hoped Roe versus Wade would eliminate. And I think that as we look forward, what we can recognize first and foremost is there's no question that the vast majority in this country recognize, appreciate, and can and will show up to say, we believe in reproductive freedom. We understand and appreciate that abortion must be affordable, accessible, available, without shame and stigma, because it is so central to not only our health and well-being of individuals who become pregnant, but for our families, our futures, and for our communities. And so I hold that in my heart as we face the tremendous challenges and witness such extraordinary harm that's being done around the country by a group of extremist state legislators who have rigged the system and who do not actually represent the views and values and needs of the majorities in their states.
I agree with you, and particularly when you speak of extraordinary harm. In 2021, I thought of the young 10-year-old girl who was brutally raped by a man, impregnated, and had to be transported out of the state because Roe v. Wade had been overturned, and she was 10 years old.
I mean, she's one example of so many. I think it's so important to recognize that those who need abortion care are often those who have, you know, lower incomes, who are working hard to make ends meet. They often live in communities that are underserved, that are over-surveilled, that are over-policed, that are under-resourced. And so when you think about the harm, you know, the 10-year-old girl you speak of is one of many. And whatever reason it is that someone has for needing an abortion, when that can't happen, or when they have to go to such extraordinary lengths, imagine needing to travel one or two or three states away, having to figure out, can you take time off from work? Can you afford to do that? You have someone to take care of your kids, or oftentimes you bring your kids with you. Where are you going to stay? I mean, we know people sleep in their cars. You know, this is a really extraordinary burden. And we know that there are people who are not getting abortions because of this. And that has devastating consequences for their health and well-being. And it has impact on what their families and their futures are going to look like.
And also a state like Texas, where there's actually a bounty placed on women's heads for enacting their personal medical rights.
I mean, what you see is sadly and tragically and horrifically what we've seen for the last 50 years. And that is that opponents of reproductive freedom will literally stop at nothing. They will try to use the levers of governmental power that they seize through gerrymandering and voter suppression. They will use harassment and violence. I mean, we live in a country that, I mean, we're certainly sitting every day with the reality of gun violence and the harm that that's causing. And we've seen that for those who provide abortion care who have been killed by extremists who oppose reproductive freedom. So, of course, a state like Texas, and they are not alone in this kind of extremism, looks for every way they can to try to not just prevent people from making these decisions, but punishing and prosecuting and persecuting. Again, because they are not only trying to prevent abortion, they are absolutely clear that they want to impose their view and their values when it comes to what they think the right role someone should play based on their gender. And so if you dare to step out of that and say that biology is not destiny, then they want to punish you for that. And that's what we're seeing.
I agree with you. And it's not just reproductive freedoms, it's education freedoms, as Governor Ron DeSantis has showed us, it's civil and judicial freedoms as well. So this has the elimination of these freedoms. They have branches, and unfortunately, this tree is growing. It reminds me of a speech that Angela Davis was discussing as we clearly are making our way into a society of fascism. I want our listening audience to take a listen. Here we go. This is Angela Davis.
The major problem we are confronting today, the major problem people throughout this country are confronting, is the problem of racism. And I think that if the last 4 years are any indication of what is to come during the next 4 years, we can indeed predict a very catastrophic period within the history of this country. Black and brown and Asian and Native American people have always been the first victims of oppression and repression in this country. But I think that white people in this country, particularly white working people, should begin to understand that they too are exploited and they too can be victims of repression. On many occasions in the past, and especially during this recent period after the elections, I have used the word fascism. I have talked about an increasingly fascist danger which people in this country must begin to come to grips with. Some people have accused me of using rhetoric which doesn't have any basis in reality. But I think that we have to be very serious during these very critical moments. We have to understand that there is indeed a very real danger, menace of fascism in the United States today. I do not think that we have already entered into a period of full-blown fascism, because fascism is not something that suddenly explodes and erupts into being. If we look back into the history of the world, if we look at countries like Germany, Spain, Italy, we see that fascism is a process. It's something that grows and develops. It's like a cancer. It starts attacking one group of people, but like a cancer, it begins to spread out with a fatal rapidity, and eventually, like a cancer, it destroys everything around it.
That was Angela Davis. It is like a cancer. Welcome back. Good morning, good people. If you're just chiming in, this is What's Going On here in WBAI New York. I'm your host, Frenchie Davis. And today, This morning, we are joined by Andrea Miller. Andrea Miller, thank you so much for being with us. She is the president of the National Institute for Reproductive Health. And Andrea, I was listening to Angela Davis discuss how the white middle class are also being exploited and co-opted. And many times, sometimes when we are divided, most times when we are divided, we don't see how we in our inner circles are being impacted. I think that there's quite often and nationally been a narrative that this primarily only impacts lower economic marginalized groups like Black people and people of color. And there is a narrative completely left out about white women and other women and who is actually impacted by the overturning of Roe v. Wade. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, Frenchie, it's really important for people to recognize that there are people from all walks of life who seek abortion care, from all income levels, all races, backgrounds, socioeconomic status. And it's at the same time paramount to notice who has the greatest access, typically those who have the greatest resources, and who has to jump through the hoops up to and including being denied access altogether, as we were discussing earlier. I mean, the very fact of who needs abortion care in the United States reflects the compounding sources of unjust inequities. And, you know, I think you noted, look, white women account for 39% of all abortions in this country. So the proportion of abortions by race means that white women proportionally in the total of abortions, that's the largest group. That said, by population, that isn't the case. So again, thinking about all of those factors that come into play around why and who needs abortion care. So you see that Black women account for more than a quarter of abortion patients, even though Black women make up only 14% of those of reproductive age in this country. You know, similarly, you know, Latinas, it's a bit closer to their proportion in the population. Same with Asian and Pacific Islander women. But I think it's important to remember that everyone, every community, every person, frankly, knows somebody, loves somebody who has an abortion, who needs an abortion. And so to assume that it's only certain groups of people is to make a huge miscalculation and is to prevent us from really moving forward effectively together to recognize this affects everyone. And, you know, I try to remind people that even if you think, well, abortion is not ever going to be something that I'm going to have to worry about. First of all, one in four women in this country will have an abortion in their lifetime. So it's highly likely that you or someone you know and love will have that happen in their lives, will need that service. But I also think it's important to remember that the overturning of Roe has happened at a time when we as a society have a failing infrastructure when it comes to a whole host of things like pregnancy-related care. Let's think for a minute about the already unconscionable rates of maternal mortality and morbidity, particularly among Black women, who in New York City are 9 times more likely to die in childbirth, which is beyond the numbers in any other part of the world, practically. So we already are doing a terrible job of addressing pregnancy-related care. And now you're going to layer on top of that additional need because there are going to be so many people who can't get abortion care. They're going to need pregnancy-related care. You know, you layer on top. So if you are pregnant or if someone in your family is pregnant and you want to have a healthy pregnancy, this is going to affect you. This is
going to This is not the country for a healthy pregnancy at all.
No, it's not. Exactly. And this is only going to make it worse. if you need, you know, childcare. It's, you know, it's already almost impossible to get affordable childcare for so many in this country. Now you're going to have added burdens to that. There's so many parts of our, I hesitate to say safety net because it's got so chock full of holes. But all of these systems are going to be impacted, are going to be further loaded and overloaded. And so I think you have to really understand that this is really a widespread issue. And it isn't the question of if I individually know this is going to impact me because I know that I'm going to need an abortion. Most people don't walk around thinking that. But the implications of eliminating that as a federal right is so stark. And I think we're only starting to see the outcomes and the manifestation of that.
And I want to talk about these rights and how we got here as I look at the political ramifications of our vote, either whether we did vote, whether we chose not to vote, which is totally your right, but the impact of them, of those implications. And we'll open up our phone lines, 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. We are visited today by Ms. Andrea Miller, who is the president of the National Institute for Reproductive Health. And we are so grateful to have her here today. Our phone lines will be open, 212-209-2877. You know, James Brown said, this is a man's world, but it's nothing without a woman. Take a listen. Thank you, James. At least one of these men recognize value in women and girls. And welcome, WBAI family. I'm Frenchie Davis, your host, this Tuesday and every Tuesday morning. I'm talking this morning with Andrea Miller, the president of the National Institute for Reproductive Health. And I'm so grateful to have this conversation with you. And I said when we returned, you know, we need to evaluate what is happening politically and legislatively. And I'm curious, do we place fault at former President Barack Obama for not cauterizing Roe v. Wade when he had the opportunity to, that he made this political promise to Planned Parenthood even, this was a political promise that was made that he did not keep. And he did not, I don't know, believe in the threat with the understanding of where the political climate had begun to spin. Do you think there's some onus in the decision by former President Barack Obama to not cauterize Roe v. Wade?
Well, Frenchie, I think the political question is a frustrating one because we have a long history, sadly, even in the Democratic Party, of taking a long time for that party to get to a place where it fully embraced reproductive freedom. I mean, you know, we had to get out of the old mantra of safe, legal, and rare, which was so harmful and so damaging and meant that a lot of elected officials could sort of say, oh, I'm pro-choice. But then when push came to shove, they didn't actually vote on it because they kept saying, well, we've got Roe versus Wade and that protects us and we don't have to go there. Moreover, I think that they made the false assumption that it would be politically harmful to them to vote on these issues and to vote to secure reproductive freedom at the federal level through statute. And we are living with the consequences of that. Now, I don't know that I put the blame on President Obama for that, because frankly, I don't know that he had the Congress that would have let him do it. All you have to do is look at what happened in the context of the Affordable Care Act debate. Unfortunately, we ended up with a, you know, tripling down in that process on the already existing harms that the Hyde Amendment was causing, which for your listeners who may not be as familiar with it, was a rider placed on every single budget since the late 70s that says that Medicaid and a whole host of other federal programs, including Indian Health Services and Federal Employees Health Benefits Package in the whole, as well as if you were serving in the military, if you work for the Department of Defense, where abortion cannot be covered in those health programs. And in the process of passing the Affordable Care Act, Congress, and this was a majority of Democrats who adopted this, doubled down on that through the STUPAC amendment and, you know, enshrined those restrictions on abortion coverage through the Affordable Care Act too. So, you know, I think that we have to remember that some of this is that we were not writ large. I mean, I admit I've been screaming to the rooftops on this one for a long, long time. But I think that there was not sufficient recognition of the threat, and therefore people were not coming forward and voting on this and making clear to their elected officials in the way that we needed to. And again, hindsight is 20/20. Let's be fair to all of us, right? And there's a lot of issues that we have been dealing with and a lot of things that people are trying to make sure our government addresses. So I appreciate that, and I don't want to place blame as much as I want to say there is still power, and that's what we need to keep in mind. We saw in the midterm elections that when not only states like California and Vermont, where you had legislatures that were excited to suggest to the voters that they enshrine these rights in their state constitutions, but Michigan, where the voters themselves, citizens themselves, put that on the ballot and voted it in. And then you had state legislatures in places like Kansas and Kentucky who already are trying to ban abortion and who said, well, let's try to make sure our state constitution can never protect. And so we're going to ask the voters to say that. And the voters said, no. Right. So, and you had so many people who ran and won on a full-throated embrace, not just of Roe versus Wade, because Roe was flawed, right? Roe allowed the Hyde Amendment. Roe allowed, you know, more than 1,000 restrictions on abortion access to be enshrined into the states in the 50 years or near 50 years that it was in place. So, you know, we now have an opportunity to really set a new course and say, this isn't just about having a right, it's about having a reality of access, a reality of affordability, a reality of accountability and for elected officials and an opportunity to say, you know, we are demanding full reproductive freedom. And I think that's really where the voters are. And I think that is where increasingly, especially a whole new generation of politicians, they're there too.
And I truly hope so. Our phone lines are open. If you're listening, 212-209-2877. We're talking about what would have been the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And now women and their families, because this impacts all people, not just women. It impacts, you know, fathers who are saying this is not the time for them to be a father, or their household is already overwhelmed as well. Or, you know, this is not the partner to have a child with, whatever those decisions are, you know, the overturning of Roe v. Wade impacts everyone across the board. Me, I tend to try to always review the constitutional amendments. And I say that because they're written in a way that turns people off and they really don't want to read them. And then it is our naivete in understanding our constitutional rights that allows our politicians to steer us in a direction that does not serve us as a humanity, as a country. And the 14th Amendment, which was passed by Congress in 1866 and ratified July 9th, 1868, I want to read this. It says, "No person shall be a senator, or representative in Congress, or elector of president or vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress, or as an officer of the United States, or as a member of any state legislature, or as in an executive or judicial officer of any state, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof." So I'm looking at this 14th Amendment. An insurrection has taken place. Justice Clarence Thomas' wife was complicit in some inappropriate actions that was also aided to try to help overturn the election for President Donald Trump. And so I'm wondering, with this amendment in place, how was the justice and other political Congress and legislators allowed to have a vote that would overturn Roe v. Wade when they participated in an insurrection?
I mean, Francie, you ask a very good question. Unfortunately, I don't have a great answer for that. But what I can tell you is that the Constitution can and should protect these rights. And it can and should be used to address exactly what you're speaking of. I think the challenge is that we had an almost lifelong concerted effort by an extremist industrial complex to pack the courts with justices, not just Justice Thomas, but as you know, with President Trump,
Amy Comey Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh.
Having had the opportunity to put three people into there, including Justice Amy Comey Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, they were placed in that position for the reasons that Trump stated on the campaign trail. He was not afraid to say exactly what he planned to do. People might have not believed him. We did a bunch of National Institute for Reproductive Health.
I believed him.
I
believed every word he said.
We did some focus groups right after the election with white women voters who voted for Trump in Ohio and North Carolina. And when we laid out for them You know he said he's going to appoint justices to overturn Roe versus Wade. You know he's going to attack the Title X family planning program. Here are all the things he has said he is going to do. And they said, well, that's not why I voted for him. I just assumed he was just saying things. And we're like, well, here it comes.
Well, he also said, grab a woman by the vulva.
That's
right. You saw that.
Yep.
He said it's okay to sexually violate women.
Right. And he also said that, you know, there should be punishment for women who have abortions. Right. So, and here we are. So he told us what he was going to do. And I think, again, you know, we have to hold these folks accountable. We have to be willing to say, no, not on our watch. And, you know, again, I have to have faith that we will get there, because you can't do this kind of work and not have some sense of faith and some belief in, you know, people's humanity.
You know, if only we were so lucky back then. I do think that he is anti abortion, because he might not be here if ever we were so lucky, but we're not. And alas, we're going to take a few calls. Thank you for our listening audience and our callers for chiming in. 212-209-2877. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, it's Thomasina from Bergen County.
Thanks, Thomasina.
So I have like a million things on my mind right now, but the most thing I want to say is I'm scared, and I think that it is a fascist country. I think that I believe we've been fascist since the inception of the United States. You know, most people besides white men of certain stature didn't have, you know, they were the only ones that had rights. They don't know. So I believe that this is a fascist country. I believe that when abortion doctors were being killed and murdered in their own homes, that we did absolutely nothing. The American Medical Association did absolutely nothing. And we have allowed this to happen. And it's so scary right now. I feel like my 20-year-old daughter is in real danger, because when she goes into an emergency room, no matter what it's for, it could be a car accident, it could be anything, she is going to be looked at as a womb and possibly being pregnant. And they will curtail care for my daughter simply because she is female. So now, for me, this is not just an abortion issue. This is misogyny. I don't care what color you are. This is downright misogyny. And I'm sorry, we have to blame the Democrats. Yes, right now the Democrats are the less fascist, you know, party. But the Democrats are responsible for absolutely taking the woman's vote, taking the black woman's vote to win all these elections, and doing absolutely nothing to stop misogyny in this fascist country.
Thomasina, we're gonna stop it there. Thank you so much. Thank you. Received. And you have reason to have that fear and those concerns. Let's take another caller. Good morning, caller. What is your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
Chris Hayes had a good point last night when he said Trump has, you know, cases coming at him from all sides, but nobody has the courage to do it. And if we sit and wait for the courts, we'll be here till, you know, the coming of someone. It's we, the people, like women with the pussy hats, you know, the people have to have some movements, you know, going up to the Supreme Courts, and we need to, like, mobilize. We need to get petitions. We need to, you know, I don't know who's going to do it, but I'm laboring in a public school. You know, we're at the front lines with our children, and we can barely get through a day, but I'm asking the listeners that everybody has to take action.
Agree, caller. Thank you. And that's everybody. That's every man, child, and woman. Good morning, caller. What is your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Russ in White Plains, and I have to agree with Thomasina today. I think your guest has pointed out the
Oh, Russ! Oh, my goodness. Okay.
I know you have a lot of calls. I'll zip right through this, but Thomasina did blame Democrats, and my wife points out that Democrats have used the abortion issue for fundraising for decades, and that's why they let it slip away. But I'd like to ask your guest what she thinks about Trump backtracking on this ridiculous abortion decision and losing evangelical voters, since the majority of Republican women support reproductive freedom. I'd like to know if she sees a little bit of light there. And one more thing, Frenchie, if you could get your mother on to discuss this Memphis situation, I know not today, and was she a police officer in Detroit or New York? Thanks very much.
Thank you, Russ. She is a retired officer of Detroit, as is my father. So yes, we will have a visit to that conversation. But Andrea, our callers are chiming in with fears, concerns. I understand we're placing blame when all of our political legislators, honestly, are to blame for not protecting its citizens. There's enough blame to go around on either side. What say you in regards to our callers that have chimed in?
Well, first, I just want to thank folks for chiming in and for paying attention to this. I think that's really important. I really hear you and appreciate you. I think the first is I want to take a moment to say, you know, let's remember not all hope is lost. There are elected officials who have really been stepping up. I want to give you a couple of examples. I want to particularly lift up that there are state elected officials and local elected officials who, first of all, you can have greater access to. You can't really touch the Supreme Court, you know, and the federal situation is kind of a mess, and that's probably an understatement. But when it comes to state and local government, you have tremendous opportunity and tremendous power. And let me give you two examples. Since Roe was when we had Roe versus Wade, in the years leading up to it, there were only two states on the United States mainland and four total that had begun to liberalize their abortion laws and make at least, you know, some abortions legal. Today, we have 18 states that have done that. And of those 18 states, half of them did so since 2019. And that's exactly the kind of work that we at the National Institute for Reproductive Health and our partners on the ground all across the country were making happen, because we were able to engage with state legislators and governors who recognized the importance of enshrining these rights into state law. And here's my second point, didn't stop there. And so, for instance, after the Dobbs decision that overturned Roe in last June, we did a report, we did an analysis. In the 90 days after Dobbs, 17 states and at least 24 municipalities enacted policies like funding for abortion care, supporting efforts for people who need practical support, like support for travel and lodging, protecting privacy and private data, making sure that those healthcare providers and people who help people get abortions, that the state would not be complicit in efforts by other states to prosecute or punish them. And that was in the middle of like August, happening in a midterm election cycle when people aren't making policy usually. So I want to give a little ray of hope that there is a lot you can do. And one of those things is to connect with your local and state officials and say you expect them to do more to not only protect this right, but to expand access to care. So that's the first thing I want to say. The second thing, to Russ's point about Trump and about the Republican Party, you know, they are many of the current leadership, which is such an unbelievably extreme group. They are doubling and tripling down on this issue. They are not letting go of it. You're seeing this in some of these state legislatures where they're talking about, you know, prosecution of those who have abortions, of those who cross state lines for it. I mean, it's really, they will stop at nothing. But I think you are also seeing some slivers recognizing they got their you-know-whats handed to them in the midterm elections, in large part because of this issue, because it's so clear. And I think that that will continue to happen. So I urge people not to feel hopeless. Yes, I understand the fear. I feel it too. the pain of seeing the harm that is happening. And we can't let that take our power away. And so I just encourage you to see that there are paths forward.
Thank you, Andrea. We'll take one more caller as we wrap up. And I just want to also add that it's very important that we push as citizens for comprehensive sex education, or what I call emotional literacy, at the very least, because without emotional literacy and comprehensive sex education, there are a lot of challenges reproductively we can avoid with education. And as long as we try to obscure comprehensive sex education for our young people, we will continue to have these fears as well for the next generations to come. Let's take our final caller. Good morning, caller. What's your name quickly and where are you calling from?
I am calling from Riverdale.
Thank you.
Well, there's some things that we could think on together. And what's interesting is I didn't know part of being a fascist was, getting rid of certain rights like that. But then again, one of the things the fascists did is they wanted population. They wanted more people because you built a nation. So that is something in a pattern that you saw back 40, 50, 100 years ago, which was, the fascists used to say, let's build a strong nation, an army, and so on. But some of these same very people, it's not congruent. Some of these same very people also are caught at times saying, well, we got too many people in the world. We got to reduce the population. So there's something more afoot. And, the ruling class, they wake up tomorrow and say, no more stools for everybody. They run this society. And they wake up tomorrow. So this is a test to see not what you could do locally. Look what it took for women's rights nationally and then globally. So this is a challenge, a constant challenge, to see if people can get together in mass. But what we're seeing is the result of this is that they're dividing the country where you can get it and where you can't get it. And then there's those people in between going, but they're going to make sure that everybody, you can't get it anywhere. Well, usually that's not the case. You wait and see what the result is. So, and then you control people's sexuality. One of your paths to connecting with God, so to speak, is your sex, the orgasm. And so they control that. They control finances. This is what they do. The sex is one of the things you have to control the populace.
Caller, I'm sorry, we're with you.
Okay, look at Gore Vidal.
We are wrapping up
Gore
our
Vidal
show.
Gore Vidal talks about this. Thank you, Frenchie.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much. And I will also say, to add to your comment, the power of we cannot afford to lose its momentum. We have to fight for the world that we want. Andrea Miller, thank you so much for being our guest this morning and educating and informing. And I look forward to the renewed anniversary of Roe v. Wade, as you said, that we cannot give up hope, but we do have to put our feet on the politician's neck. And we have our own accountabilities to be responsible for in our immediate communities and in our families. I'll leave the last word with you.
Thank you, Frenchie. I really appreciate the chance to be here. And thank you to all the listeners. I think the last word is, look, when it comes down to it, we need to be clear that we understand that the reason behind the overturn of Roe is a desire to control. And we need to take that power back. We need to say that we ultimately need to be in control of our futures and our families and our destinies. And I do believe that that is where the vast majority in this country is. And I still continue to believe that we have levers of power that we can turn in our favor that will ultimately work their way to a place where we can make the change at the national level. And meantime, we just have to find every place and every way we can to mitigate the harm and create as many safe havens as we can.
Thank you so much for that. Again, that is Andrea Miller. She is the president of the National Institute for Reproductive Health. I want everyone to have a beautiful morning. Again, stay warm. It's a little, you know, wet and drizzly outside, 41 degrees and 28 this evening. Take care of yourselves and those you love. I am Frenchie Davis, your host, this Tuesday and every Tuesday morning here on What's Going On, WBAI New York. Signing off for now.
WBAI New York, we're at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Good morning once again, and thank you so much for tuning in. Coming up at 9 o'clock will be Law of the Land with Gloria J. Brown Marshall. And Democracy Now! Is coming up next at 8 a.m., so please stay tuned. We are listener-sponsored and commercially free.
Things happen fast on the street. When you're driving, your speed can feel slow. But if you hit someone, it's terrifyingly fast. Drivers, look for pedestrians and cyclists, and slow your turns to 5 miles per hour. Speeding ruins lives. Slow down. This message brought to you by the New York City